Blog Talk Radio.
Taken with lies, CPS telling stories, trying to ruin our lives. My kids was kidnapped, here goes all for the cash. You forced the kid, child rearing, man, this shit is all bad. My kids was kidnapped, here goes all for the cash. My kids was kidnapped, here goes all for the cash. My kids was kidnapped, it was taken with lies.
It started with the way I looked, progressed to how I carried it. They couldn't stand a man like me could understand what marriage is. Providing for my wife and kids the way that I inherited. Mama raised a man who don't know nothing but etiquette. How can they just come and take what's mine and I ain't caught a check? Never had a GPS, still my life is stripped away. Fighting for my right to parent cause I got cancer for my face. See through all your bullshit lies, I'll be the one you love to hate. Fuck you motherfuckers, I'll be lying, taking people's shit. Urging up a happy home cause y'all don't like the way we live. Fucking free provide no abuse, then y'all should mind your bitch. For fucking up my right to live, you motherfuckers know me, bitch. Tired, I can take you motherfucker, I'm a bear with all. Lawyer, they appointed me, never even took my call. They falsified my court screen, flat out lying at it all. All this shit is covered for, but they ain't gotta follow law.
Kidnapped, they was taken with lies. DTS telling stories, trying to ruin our lives. My kids were kidnapped, it was all for the cash. You forced a kid, child rearing, man, this shit is all bad. My kids were kidnapped, they was taken with lies. DTS telling stories, trying to ruin our lives. My kids were kidnapped. It was all for the cash, divorce the kid, child ring, man, this shit is all bad. My kids were kidnapped, it was taken with lies. CPS telling stories, trying to ruin our lives. My kids were kidnapped, it was all for the cash, divorce the kid, child ring, man, this shit is all bad. My kids were kidnapped.
Come on, tell me, do y'all feel my pain? Watch my wife cry herself to sleep, and I can't do a thing. On the verge of losing it, swear I'm about to go insane. Praying that I have the strength to make it through another day. Can't begin to understand all the shit my kids go through. The pain they feel or what they think for real is all they've been through. Snatch away, wait, you friends, and broke me when I heard the news. Rotting in the prison cell, shit that I ain't even do. The fight is real, we won't stop, but all the kids are coming home. Playing games for they ain't know the game, I'm with the king of thrones. Lawyered up, got a pitbull picture, now this shit is on. Need to take my family back, and trust me, we don't stand alone. Yes, she is for everyone, we go with what we're going through. Be a voice for all of y'all, the pain I feel, I feel it too. Stitches for all the complications, pushing hard to make it new. All the tricks, y'all, there's a hope, damn, it's one for you, kid, yeah.
You know, I ain't the only one that's going through this shit. There's a million other people like me in every city, every state. All across this fucking nation. These people are kidnapping our kids. This foster care shit. Man, motherfuckers need to get it together and go up against this shit before it's too late. If it can happen to me, it can happen to you. You guys probably know somebody that's going through this shit, man. Y'all gotta stick together. If we stand together, we can end all this bullshit, man. I'm telling you, kidnap.
Welcome, everyone. You're listening to Assisting Pro Se Litigants. Tonight's episode is about hope, forgiveness, changing habits, and breaking glass ceilings. My name is Raquel Okiai, and my co-host is Ashraf Haroon. That intro song was the very talented Young Prize 517 artists Brandon and Jessica Letts. Good evening. It's evening for me, probably afternoon for you, Ashraf. How are you today? Tonight.
I'm good. Thank you.
Glad to hear it. So we have an exciting show planned, and I hope you all will get your pencils out and your notebooks and take some notes, because we are conducting a series of episodes, and the main topic, Ashraf, that we're talking about is the broken chair petition, which is an avenue for pro se litigants who have been victims of extrinsic fraud, So it's a little unique group, and there's plenty of those out there who are victims, and that's court corruption, those litigants, those pro se litigants looking for avenues to a solution. So that's what we're talking about, and this is our second episode. We did touch a little bit on the hope, forgiveness, and change topic last week towards the end. And Afresh and I decided to continue that conversation, and we are going to be bringing in a guest who has gone through the process of the petition. Is that right? It's one of your clients.
Yeah. Well,
okay,
actually,
perfect.
So I'm on with his, you know,
power off.
Yes, he's a client. But
hold on a second. Hold on. I can barely hear you.
Yeah, he is a client, but he's more of a friend in that
okay. He's
given me a lot of insights with regards to how to, and he gave me a unique insight on hope and forgiveness and how it relates to, you know, his belief and faith of Christ, and that is what helped John to overcome what has been corruption in his life for the past 8 years. And I think that, you know, we were discussing when he first was engaged in the whole series of litigation that starts off, and then, you know, him hiring an attorney and then another attorney, and then both or two or three attorneys throwing him under a bus. And he did not see it until it was all done and everything was pretty much over, and it's been now 8 years. But now he sees that there was extrinsic fraud, and he's been able to, since he's found that extrinsic fraud, he's been able to cross over to the other side, going from the pro se litigant, someone who's a victim, the baby lamb with a broken leg, to someone who has the ability to basically bark back at the court, even if your weight is only that of a 4-pound chihuahua. You know, it's the mighty chihuahua concept. He's basically gone into court in a very nice tone and basically just stated, you know, the gravamen of the complaint in his case, and he made it very clear to the judge that based on this gravamen, that basically he has a cause of action. Now, we've submitted this particular petition very simply stated. There are no facts in it other than the gravamen of the complaint and a complete statutory requirement showing that there is illegal sewer work. In his case, the gravamen of the complaint is illegal sewer work. So he's presented this three times, and each time the way the judge viewed it, like the first time the judge just dismissed it, the second time the judge dismissed it, but then decided that she's going to pull a little trick on John. And what she did was she made a payment that he was supposed to make go away so that she can call the sheriff. So a sheriff knocks on his door and basically tells him, you know, gives him this bench warrant, in essence, you know, telling him to come back this morning. And this morning, you know, she was nice about it, but she had two police officers there ready to take him and put him in jail. And over what? I think a lot of what happened was the judge really did not like the fact that John just stood his ground. And he never wavered from telling the judge that, you know, based on the gravamen of the complaint, based on that simple fact that there is illegal sewer work, he has a cause of action, and the judge has basically tried to threaten him. I mean, the threat today was that he would be put in jail, and she wanted to show him that she got a public defender for him. There were two police officers inside the courtroom when he was, you know, making his testimony. And I believe that all of that was retaliation. It was retaliation because John had basically pinned all of the extrinsic fraud on the attorney and not on the attorney's client. And she was very upset with John that he was addressing the attorney and not the client. She asked John, why would you go after the attorney? Well, the attorney is the only one who has a voice in the court. In addition to that, I don't believe in this case that the attorney is even paying the client the money that John is supposed to pay. I think that's going into the wolf pack, the group of attorneys that took advantage of the situation and the way the court was conducting themselves.
Mm-hmm. He seems like the classic... He seems like the classic victim. Did he have a – I'd actually like to bring him on right away, if that's okay with you, Ashraf.
Yes. Yeah.
So this is the broken chair petition being played out, and this is the third time that he's making application to the court, and that was today in court. Okay, hold on.
Yeah.
Hi, John. My name's Raquel Okiai. Nice to meet you. I'm from Florida. Are you in California, like Ashraf?
No, I'm in Bloomington, Indiana, campus of Indiana University, home of IU basketball.
Oh, okay, good. All right. You like your seat.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Thanks for taking the time to call in tonight. We really appreciate it. So I'd certainly would like to hear from your perspective. What happened today? Where are you at, and what was the result?
Well, it's like always, they're pretty adversarial. It's a machinery. It's a monolithic creature. You go to the court, they use their posture to approve their sayings. They have their gatekeepers. The judge is a gatekeeper. You go in, you try to raise a cause of action, and then before you know it, you're being challenged in every sentence and every word. It's like you're not worthy to have civil rights within the system. And you just want the gravamen of the complaint to show through, you know? You just want them to know that, look, you know, this isn't socialism. We're not in a communist state. You know, and if you try to do anything on your own, they'll bust you for that and call it self-help because you didn't go through their system. But if you go through their system, they're going to make you do what they want. So it's really a catch-22. And usually it's the people that tattletale on you, whistleblow on you. You know, you could be out moving. Anymore, you can't get a shed on your land. You know, you can't do anything without permission. So for me,
right.
I figured, you know, I'm going to keep doing it. I'm going to keep trying it and, you know, hopefully bring a resolve to what I've been going through. They force their own resolve. The courts are forced mediators, arbitrators, professional settlers. You know, that's their design. That's what they want to do.
John, when you say gravamen of the complaint, what exactly do you mean by that?
It's the heart of the issue, you know. It's why I'm there. It's the heart of everything. It's the, you know, you get into these court situations and these attorneys, and they create a bunch of cloud of litigation, a bunch of smoke, so to say, that drives the whole case away from the gravamen of the complaint. And you're stuck in this cloud of litigation, and it has nothing to do. And they want to pull you out of it. The courts kind of treat everybody that comes to the system as little children or that they're trying to, like in a divorce or a custody dispute, that, you know, people go to the law, so they're thinking that everybody that comes to them is coming in anger and resentment and hatred towards their neighbor. And there are real victims out there that are coming to the legal system for real genuine help only to be treated, you know, just like a person that's trying to harm their neighbor. And I don't know if that's predicated on most people. Yeah, I don't know if that's predicated on the fact that most people do go to the system, like 95% of them go to the system to stab their spouse or get a divorce or get them children and hate and do corrupt things to one another.
Yeah,
and I would say
sometimes, right.
Yeah, so they're already wired.
But that's not an excuse. That's not an excuse to not judge these matters equitably, fairly, justly, in the search for the truth, you know, and not in the rush for a prosecution or in the rush for a settlement, in a rush for a plea bargain. There's so many different problems within the system. How were you able to now? Let me ask you something today. I'm concerned about today. Did they strike your petition again, or are you able to go back?
Yes.
They did.
Yeah, the judge was a lady, and she actually put it on the record that she's striking it, and so she striked it down, and she gave me her analogy and philosophy on law and fraud and all that, and you know, and even threatened me that I could be liable for damages against her servant of the court, her, you know, the attorney, and that they do not have to prove anything, and I could still be liable for damages. So that's a pretty tall threat.
Yeah, it is.
Here's the funny thing is that,
and all you're doing is you're asking them to hear the gravamen of the complaint.
I'm just asking them to.
Be,
Yes.
Which happens to be extrinsic fraud against your attorney of record. And they don't like that because they're all sort of, you know, playing together. So, you know, one attorney washes the hand of the other, and the judge, whether is being complacent or is just a part of it, colluding with the other side and the attorneys. And who gets screwed? The client. So all you're asking this judge to do is hear the one issue which you want to offer your proof, right? Which is
yep.
the one issue that your attorney of record has committed fraud on the court. And that's something that they should be, must be, liable
interestingly
in
enough,
a court of justice.
Interestingly enough, if you look at the pleadings in, that we put together, none of them really go into the facts of the case, but they're basically saying to the court, these are the statutes. This is what we feel is relevant and important to the case. And we want to set the motion to set date for calendar. And we're not even allowed to go through that door. So that's the problem, is that it's a gatekeeper system. And they're not going to let you get in unless it's something where they feel maybe they might benefit, or they feel like it's a new case and they've not already been arbitrary. Because if they were to reopen this, then they would have to change their philosophy on all, and take another path. The judge had explicitly stated to me the finality, or the, you know, of the case cannot be overturned so easily, because if so, litigation would never end. She said that if this was to be overturned, well, think about the other side. He could get angry that his mom's peach trees that you took out. It could all be brought back to life. And so I think the judicial machinery of this thing really caps these things down so hard that they don't want to open them back up, even in case of extrinsic fraud. And they warn you that, you know, because, you know, you could come out worse than you was before. Who knows? But at the end of the day, depending on how much fraud you've had to eat and what you've had to go through, you know, and I told Saad this, and I'll tell anybody this. I feel personal with the law. I feel like, look, if I have to go to the law against my neighbor or be brought in because of him, I would rather be offended on than be the offender. I'd rather be the abused than the abuser. You know, there's just two ways to go, really. You're stuck in between them two ways. When you go to the system, it's better to be the one that's being abused than the abuser. It's better to be the one that's being harmed than the one that creates the harm. Because at the end of the day, when you leave that courtroom, you at least have the dignity and the knowledge that you know in your heart that they're making the record against themselves, and that's the beauty of innocence and being bona fide. You know, and I tell my friends, you know, because you get a lot of discovery when you go through this stuff. You know, truth, it was first. Corruption was second. Truth has always been here. It's bona fide, and that's what makes it our anchor. And that's why you can go to bed at night and hold your head high. It doesn't matter what they say. They're just making the record against themselves, and it gets worse and worse as the days go by. So, you know, I'm a Christian, yes, and you know, I kind of believe in the philosophy that if you sow it in corruption, you reap it in incorruption. And I kind of believe that those people are making the record strongly against themselves. And as long as I'm willing to go through it, you know, they're just making me a brighter and brighter star, you know?
What's
the
next
person.
Step, John?
Well, I don't know. After today, you know, you spend a lot of time really thinking about all that stuff. And you kind of say, well, what do I do now? You know, I don't know. I frankly don't know. I don't know. I haven't thought about it.
I think today, you know, the judge, all I have to say is I've never seen a case where someone just wants to turn in a petition. There is absolutely no facts in this petition. The only fact is that there is the gravamen of the complaint. There is illegal sewer work. It is a conclusive presumption. It is an irrefutable fact that there is illegal sewer work on the property. And that needs to be recognized. That's the only thing that John is trying to do. He has no facts in his case other than that one fact, and it's actually written in an order. A prior order has it written in. Now, this judge has gone on. The first time she dismissed it, she was very nice. She's always extremely polite, so polite that you almost get the impression that she's, you know, wants to bake cookies for you. She's so nice about how she does it. But keep in mind that as soon as you turn your back, she turns into, you know, the lioness. and she's in the lion's den, and she does whatever she wants. So she dismissed the petition the first time, and she gave, you know, John a stern warning that, you know, this is not good. Why are you going after the attorney? But the reality is, it is the attorneys who took advantage of the situation, who held the extrinsic fraud. And in addition, you know, he's suing the attorney in his individual capacity. The judge became extremely angry about that, especially in the second hearing. Now, the second hearing, she dismissed it, but then she was more stern with John. And then this time, after the second hearing, she played a little trick. John made a payment. She made the payment go away so that she can hold him in contempt, serve him with an order to come in, a bench warrant, basically, to come in within 4 days, and appointed a public defender as if he's a criminal. In addition to that, he also was, you know, greeted by two police officers who were ready to take him to jail.
They're systematically
trying to... What were they going to charge you with? Did you know?
Well, you got to understand. Well, see, you got to understand. Saad is he's very good at. I call him Saad, but yeah, he's very good at. He's good at writing legal matters and bringing them to the attention of the court in a statutory stance, and it's proper. What he puts down is absolutely proper. The courts recognize it. You know, they speak the same language. And the seeds of discovery start to get in your head pretty quick as you, you know, hang around them and work with them. And it becomes real obvious. Like, you know, one of the examples was one of the things that I've learned, and I didn't pick up on it before. I always thought an attorney was a lawyer, right? Who doesn't, you know, an attorney? The truth is, when you get behind the scenes, you know, their chain of custody. So you go get yourself an attorney, and you're going to get on a leash. That's what you're doing. He's a servant of the court. You know, I've heard of people going through bankruptcy and things of that nature, and they can't make a car payment. They can't breathe without that attorney. He becomes their guide, leash on them. So the courts are aggravated in our case that we're trying to open something up that's been sealed, and they want it to go away. But unfortunately, the damage is there, and I've got two choices. Either I continue on my path and push and know I'm going to get retaliation because of that. I'm sure of that. I've already
Can you appeal that decision? Did she issue a written decision, or will she?
There's absolutely no need to appeal in whatsoever, because the matter is, it's a conclusive presumption. There is a legal surrogate. In addition to that, based on what I can see, this is in the order. So her interpretation has never gone on the record. She never wrote down her interpretation. She just basically keeps threatening John to not file the petition 3 times now. And there's no need for an appeal because there's no order to appeal. I mean, she's never addressed the issue. It's almost like whenever the gravamen of the complaint comes up, everybody looks the other way. And they do it, the attorney, in his case, the opposing counsel, has never even replied to any of these petitions. The court is moving on their own motion on behalf of the attorney in his individual capacity. That's the use of government funds to protect an individual. It is absolutely insane, and it is so clear that the judge has become incredibly retaliatory because John has capacity. He never tells the story. He goes in, he basically just tells them the cause of action and just says, look, I have declaratory witnesses that will testify in court. All we need to do is just get a trial date. The other party hasn't even responded. They've received notice and have not responded yet. We just want to go straight to trial. And there's no need for law and motion because there's no facts to dispute other than an irrefutable fact, which is in a court order, that there is illegal sewer work, which is the gravamen of the complaint. So John really doesn't have any issue. In addition, when you look at John's petition, it does not ask for any money or any injunctive relief or any stipulation of any fact All it wants is a petition to adjudicate a fact that there is illegal sewer work and he has the right to proceed. Now, that's the only thing he's asking for, and it's purely discovery. And if you are asking for discovery and you are not asking for injunctive relief, they have no right to threaten John the way they're threatening him. And that is the part that I just have a real hard time with, and I find this happening. This is very commonplace because there is no rebuttal to an irrefutable fact. How would you rebut, or how would you try to argue a fact that there's illegal sewer work in the prior order? So there's no way to rebut it.
It's a very scary obstacle. And before we get down to the bottom of the hour, which we're going to have a break, I'd like you, John, to have the last word. And I want you to tie in how you've been successful to get to this point, because it's a long journey to go from a, you know, normal person, right, regular person, to have standing in the court of law and to be able to speak their language. I know Ashraf and I talked about this over the phone the other day, and we talked about the idea that it took forgiveness and it took hope for you to get this far. And I do think that there's still hope for you. But how have you been able to overcome all of these obstacles and get to this point?
Well, you know, I talked with Ashraf today. And I said, you really think that? I said, well, I don't know. You know, for me as a person, I'm married. I've been married for 24 years. I have 3 children. And one thing is certain. When you go to the legal system, it has a negative effect. People get angry. They get you can't stop thinking about it. It's tit for tat. You know, but if your focus in life is not hatred and animosity and contention and enmity, and yet you always see the glasses half full. And, you know, I think it takes being a Christian. I say that strongly because, for me, I have a hope that's higher than this world. It's a lot higher than all that garbage. And so one thing I try to do is I try to keep the focus. I try to keep the path. And I know one of the biggest revelations in all this for me was understanding the communion. You know, when you go to church and you see they break bread, you know, and we drink in remembrance of Christ, when you go through trials, because he went through a trial, when you're being crucified over the government, which that's what we are getting into as a government, religious, political system, the same thing, it becomes real painfully obvious that Jesus is still in the world. That, you know what? They did it to me. They're going to do it to you. Now let me show you the way. And you really start paying attention to things at that point because it unfolds. Then you get discovery. And then as you start to look into those scriptures, you begin to realize that Jesus was not just breaking bread and calling it the Last Supper. He was saying, look, you got to eat and drink the sins of this world, because if you don't, they're going to eat and drink you. And you'll suffer in doing this. And then the paradigm of the cross on your back starts to take hold, and you realize that if you're going to pull yourself up out of the anger, the hostility, the enmity, and the resentment, you've got to suffer. And suffer means that you don't get your gratification of beating the hell out of people. You don't get your gratification of blowing people's heads off. You know, if somebody sins against you, they challenge you to sin, and you've got to keep that in your head. And I think that the unfolding revelation of Jesus Christ through my tribulation has given me an insight into the communion with our Lord. And I really take that to heart, because if it wasn't for him showing the way. And you know what gets me about this is that, and you know, can I go into this? Is this okay?
Yes, go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. What is interesting to me is that, you know, I understand scriptures pretty deep anyway. But you know what really intrigues me is that the night that he was betrayed before the Last Supper, he goes down to a rock and he prays 3 times that if it be all possible, he knows it's coming. He knows they're going to put him through the trial. He knows that. He says, in prayer, if at all possible, let this cup pass from me. And he does it 3 times. And if you know anything about numbers in the Bible, it means pay attention. And then he goes back up and he sees him sleeping 3 times. And then he says, wake up 3 times. I get that as listen, don't sleep, wake up. I'm going to show you something. I get that out of that. And then he said, after the third time of finding them asleep, he said, it doesn't matter anymore. Here they come. They come with their torches. And here's the interesting part. They grab him, and they begin to flog him. And Peter, which is one of his apostles, takes a sword out of his sheath, and he knocks this guy's ear off. A high priest, not a public official. This was like a big dude. This isn't just like some soldier. And Jesus immediately puts his hand on the guy's head, and he, according to the gospel, he heals this man's ear and looks straight at Peter, and he says, "Put up your sword. Those that use it perish by it." And then he says this phrase that is magical. He says, "Shall I deny this cup that the Father hath given me?" He's drinking that cup. He's accepting it as a gift from God to show us the way. And that's an interesting concept to me, because when I go through these things, I've noticed that the judiciary, the opposing attorneys, they can be wicked. They'll do dirty stuff to you to try to get you to be retaliatory back so they can get you under chain of custody. They want to drag you into the courts, what they want to do, and they want to put you under their rule of law. It ain't about right and wrong. It's about jurisdiction. To keep out of their net, you got to let them make the record against themselves. You got to eat and drink from the Lord's table of wisdom and truth over the law of sin and death that's at your door trying to take you. Remember, there are two in the field. One is taken and one is left. You know, the big bad wolf, he can come and huff and puff and blow a house down if your house is built on sand. I think that that's the difference and the defining moment that helps me find peace. I know that I know when I went to law, I went to the legal system for help as a real person. But when I got in, I found that it was just entrenched in sin. And it became a battle of sin, not a battle of law. And they continue to make the record against themselves to this day. So I'm quite pleased at my position versus theirs. It doesn't matter what they say. It doesn't matter what they do. At the end of the day, who's got the truth and who's got the record? And that's the beauty of partaking of the Lord's table over in wisdom over the law of sin and death. That's the beauty of being able to accept these things. And that's hard to do. But, you know, and I told Saad this, Asheroff, I said, you know, I stumbled upon a scripture that really speaks loudly. And it's in the book of John. And most people don't know this stuff, but there are 66 books in the Bible. There's 27 in the New Testament. And I think there's 38 or 39 in the Old Testament. Yeah, it's 39. And there's 27 books in the New Testament. And a lot of mainstream Christianity talks about the mark of the beast in the last days. And I've heard so much about that. It's like, really? And nothing seems to hit. But one day, I started looking around at this scripture in John chapter 6. And what became real apparent was, there's only one chapter and verse that's 666 in the whole New Testament. It freaked me out. No other place in the whole New Testament, out of 27 books, thousands of words and verses and chapters, is there any other place where you can find John 666? And it relates to communion, what we're talking about here, partaking of the sins of the world rather than them partaking of you. Because in John chapter 6, Jesus feeds a bunch of people with a few fish and loaves of bread. And as I said earlier, numbers are big. And the remnants of those baskets that were left over from all these fish and loaves of bread was the number 12. And any time I see 12 in the scriptures, I sit up out of my chair because I know what 12 means. It's perfection. And there is something to unfold in John chapter 6 because Jesus tells all his followers, all those people, after he just fed them all this food, he said, now listen, he says, you've got to eat and drink my flesh and my blood. And he hadn't died yet, so he was being very prophetic, and nobody could understand what he was saying. But these were his followers. He could have had 10,000 followers. We don't know. But we know at 667 how many he has. So he says to them, you got to eat my flesh and drink my blood. It is a symbol. It is symbolic. It is a metaphor. It is a paradigm to eat and drink the sins of this world, to go through this life, and if people attack you, if the judiciary is harming you, if people are making the record against themselves, hey, man, lift your cup. Let them make that record. You know, you may have went to the law in honesty. You may have went seeking relief in purity. And you may have just found out what it's really about. It has nothing to do with those things. It's a heinous hole. And there's a lot of wicked people in it. And it's for profit. And they're vindictive. And they're cruel. But you know what? At the end of the day, don't participate. If they want to participate in sin, let them. Well, at John chapter 6, Jesus makes the statement that you got to eat my flesh and drink my blood. And there's a big uproar about that. And his followers start complaining, and it comes right down to John 6:66. And Jesus says before that, he says, do you have a problem with this? He says, look, if you don't eat my flesh and if you don't drink my blood, you have no life in you at all. And that makes sense. If you can't eat and drink the sins of this world, you don't have life in you. You've got nothing but animosity, retaliatory, enmity, strife, you have contention. You know, you're just constantly in port. You're constantly in enmity. That makes a lot of sense. And
I think so, too. It's absolutely fascinating, John, and I really appreciate you sharing that with us. As a Catholic, I really do believe in the idea of suffering, and what we do is we offer that suffering up to God. So it's in your words, partaking in the drink, in the cup. And it's partaking because the suffering has to happen in the same way that Jesus has suffered. That's clear in the Bible that Jesus has suffered.
Yes.
So I really do appreciate that perspective. And a lot of people like you, like myself, find hope and forgiveness in God and in our faith. And it really is it's inspiring to hear you talk about it. Really appreciate it. And thank you so much for calling in. You're welcome to stick around if you want to. We are going to go on to a five-minute break, music break. You're listening to Assisting Pro Se Litigants, Hope, Forgiveness, Change, and Breaking Glass Ceilings. My name is Raquel Okiai. My co-host is Ashraf Haroon, and we will be back in 5 minutes. Thanks for listening.
The mama pajama rolled out of bed and she ran to the police station. When the papa found out, he began to shout and he started the investigation. It's against the law. It was against the law. Oh, what did mama saw? It was against the law. The mama looked down and spit on the ground every time her name gets mentioned. The papa said, oh, if I get that boy, I'm gonna stick him in the house of detention. Well, I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going, I'm on my way. I'm taking my time, but I don't know where. Goodbye to Rose, the queen of Corona. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard. Mama, take me away, but the press let the story leak. Now when the radical preachers come to get me released, we's all on the cover of Newsweek. And I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going. I'm on my way. I'm taking my time, but I don't know where. Goodbye to Rose, the queen of Corona. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard.
Everyone, you're listening to Assisting Pro Se Litigants, Hope, Forgiveness, Change, Breaking Glass Ceilings. My name is Raquel Okai. My co-host is Ashraf Haroon. We are a Reach Out America radio network of broadcasters, which is a WIN World Integrity News Network. Thank you, Bobby B. Singer, for hosting our program. And if you all are listening online and you have a question or comment, we'll definitely take your call. The call-in number is 646-787-8638. Again, that's 646-787-8638. Welcome back. That was an awesome first 30-minute segment, Ashraf. And I want to I want to ask your opinion. I think particularly what John Arnold had said at the end concerning how he got started from the beginning and where he is at now, and that road to overcome so many different obstacles. Something you and I talked about, hope and forgiveness, allows you to release your anger and hate. That is the cup of poison that you are drinking, and it will defeat you.
Yeah, and
what
I think that John has a special, you know, he has a special talent in that I think his faith was able to give him that forgiveness. Like, he naturally has that forgiveness for everybody because that's just the way he is. And for him, you know, he just sees the iniquity of the court, the corruption of the court, and truly how evil they can be at times. I mean, you know, all he's asking for is a simple declaration that, well, in essence, all he's done is he's just asking the court to basically recognize an irrefutable fact, and that he's being dragged in, and he's been dragged through this experience for 8 years now. It's put his family, his business, and his life at risk. And now they're threatening him with jail time. It's absolutely so incredible how the court reacts to something that I believe is so simple. And anybody who looks at it, anybody who is not a lawyer, and that's the point, you know, any lawyer that looks at this, and he's brought this to attorneys, and they've all said, no, you can't do anything. But the reality is, it was his own lawyer who threw him under a bus initially, and he basically got paid for it from John and from the opposing side. And it's obvious that the court and the judge are very biased towards the opposing counsel. It's such a bias that it's hard to believe that they're doing this in open court. That's the thing that's odd, but it's so well hidden also. And that's where the darkness in the courtroom, you have to overcome it by focusing down. And that's what John did. He just focused just on a declaratory function. It's just, all he's asking for is discovery in reverse. Instead of asking them to admit to an irrefutable fact, he's basically saying it's an irrefutable fact, it's a conclusive presumption in accordance with the evidence code. And he has the right to bring that conclusive presumption to the court and to litigate on that behalf. And that's all he's looking to do. He hasn't brought in any facts regarding the case. He doesn't go in and tell his story. He speaks strictly in statute, and he objects in court whenever the opposing side makes any kind of statement. But he's done it so well that the court doesn't even want the opposing counsel to even attempt to respond because it's so simple. The court has refused to make the other side accountable for the fact that, you know, they have taken advantage of him for 8 years. And he would have a cause of action against every licensed individual that participated. And there were many, many licensed individuals that would be in collusion, working in concert, be in conspiracy, or at least be complicit. The judge obviously is complicit in this matter. You know, the judge obviously allows this corruption, and she's gone on today on the third hearing where we tried to present it. She goes off on a tangent stating that you don't have a cause of action, your cause of action is weak, and if you try to bring this up, you know, I could have you, you know, I could have him, you know, file an action for defamation of character, and I don't need to prove that there was any damages. I can give him whatever damages he asked for. That's an irrevocable license to commit fraud.
Yeah, that does not sound fair. What is John? Does John Arnold have any recourse?
I think, you know, his case is basically was resolved in, I believe, 2010. There was an order, and this illegal sewer line has been existing since. He has not paid, you know, the opposing party. I mean, he pays all of his bills.
Which he was ordered to do so.
Perfect credit.
Okay.
Pardon me? John has perfect credit, but just out of principle, he decided he was not going to pay this one because he didn't believe that it was true. So the judge dragged him in on a contempt order, and the judge has been almost threatening him with jail time because of a simple $8,000 bill, but the illegal sewer line would be $50,000 because the work that was done. So, I mean, he's not talking about money at this point. He's not talking about – he just wants to the court to recognize that he has the right to bring this to court and to litigate on behalf of that fact and to get the discovery that he needs. Once he presents his petition, he just wants to go straight to trial. There's no discovery needed in this particular matter because it's so simple. It's an irrefutable fact that's in the court order originally. So there's really nothing to discuss. But they go through so many attempts to conceal, to hide, that basically it becomes almost somewhat of a joke that they create this cloud of litigation, and then they revel in the cloud of litigation to, you know, look at it and say, well, you know, you had 8 years to litigate this and you didn't do it, so you slept on your rights. Well, no, we just found out new information. I mean, this is information that we just realized recently. You know, it was not, it has not come up, and we need the discovery on this particular.
And generally speaking, when we're talking about fraud on the court, there is no statute of limitations.
No, and on top of that, it is very likely that John could, on a USC Section 42, 1983 civil rights violation. I mean, this is a civil rights violation for him not to be able to present a petition in court and get a proper
right.
response from an attorney. It's almost like the attorney is basically saying, well, if there is fraud, then my client will pay. Well, why should the client pay? I mean, the client really doesn't have a right to even speak in court, and you're the one who's basically in court. You're the one who's asking for the money, and I believe truly in his case, the client's not even receiving the money. It's the attorneys who already colluded in this matter, and so we're trying to address that matter. Now, if it does...
Yeah, you know what it sounds like to me, Ashraf? It's special rights. It's special rights to
yeah.
the people, you know, involved in the courts, who are officers of the court. So the attorneys have special rights. The judges have special rights. But
yeah.
in reality, special rights for special groups is unconstitutional.
That's true.
I mean, the U.S. Supreme Court have ruled on this issue already. I mean, it's equal. It's equal. A due process under the law equal due process. What we have today, unfortunately, in the court system is an unfair, unbalanced, and it's not meant to be that way. Or it's not supposed to be that way, in my opinion.
Well, John has done absolutely nothing wrong, number one. He has been perfect in his delivery. He goes into court. He speaks strictly from statute. He objects strictly on statutory requirements. He operates as an attorney. He's not asking for any special rights whatsoever. All he's saying is, I have a right to present this matter in the court. And
exactly.
And
but they let other people present actions against Party A, against Party B. But when we're talking about officers of the court, it's like they're going ballistic. Don't you dare. Don't you dare sue this attorney. Because your case is over. You don't have a right to prove fraud in the court. Forget about your evidence. Forget about your irrefutable facts. We're just not going to hear it. I mean, that's complete negligence on the part of the court.
And the point with John's case is that he's not even asking for any money. He's not asking for injunctive relief. He's not asking for anything other than that the court recognize, because the court refuses to recognize that the gravamen of the complaint is true. I mean, the reality is there is an illegal sewer line. So once the court recognizes that, then, well, who put the sewer line in? Then it's obvious. The opposing party has already admitted to putting in the illegal sewer line. So there is nothing here to discuss, absolutely nothing to discuss. It is just a matter of law that he has a right, and he's going for this right. But the interesting part of it is how the court reacts. I mean, when you do this and you pick an irrefutable fact and you don't ask for any injunctive relief, if you don't ask for any injunctive relief, then they cannot claim collateral estoppel. They cannot claim res judicata, where there is judicial estoppel, or that there is issue estoppel. It does not exist because you're not asking for it. You're merely asking for a discovery, and every person has the right to a discovery. And you can actually file a declaratory judgment, a Section 57, that basically requests strictly discovery, nothing more than just the discovery. And the point that he's asking for for the judge to recognize an irrefutable fact, and for the judge to come back and provide him with a bench warrant telling him that they want him in back in within 4 days, and then they have a public defender in a civil action, and they have two police officers ready to take him to jail. I mean, what kind of threat is that? That is absolutely ridiculous. It is almost, as John said, they're making a record against themselves. And all they're doing, and he's very kind.
It's abuse of process, Ashraf. It's abuse of process. So how does he have the I want to, because we are coming down to the end, and I do want to close it up with a discussion about the hope and forgiveness part, because this is important, because this is where John has gotten to the point where he has, where he has been able to, as a pro se litigant, gain standing, go to court, put the cloud of litigation aside, focus on the gravamen complaint, measure down the complaint to a point where he is focused on the gravamen, which is an irrefutable fact, right? So all the law, all the justice, all the righteousness, you know, is on John's side, and he's cool and calm, you know, as a cucumber. He goes to court, he does the process properly, he knows the process, he knows the objections, he knows the statutes. How has that helped them along the way I just want to start it off with, it has been, you know, his hope and forgiveness that has helped him through the way.
But it shines through. The thing that's interesting about John is that it shines through in his smile. You know, you could hear it in his voice. You could see it in a smile. I mean, he does not allow their corruption and their threats. I mean, the judge is very nice, but you know that she's got a knife behind her back, and she's stabbing John in the back, you know, but she's acting very nice on the record. You know, it's the absolute niceness, and it's his ability to also be nice to her, you know, to talk calmly, to have a smile on his face, because he has hope, and he has forgiveness, so he harbors no pain. He harbors no resentment, and the interesting thing is, it's the forgiveness. If you don't forgive, it's like you're carrying a cup of poison and you're drinking from it. And that's the problem. You're drinking from it. They're not. And so this is, I think, one of the things that John has that is absolutely, you know, that I found to be rather interesting to see in action, because he's able to deliver, and he's able to deliver proper objections, and he's done a lot of studying on how to object in court. That's one of the things that he's done, is he's starting to strictly speak in the court's language, not in the normal lay vernacular. People go in, and they speak just like they would in normal life. And that is not the way the court wants to hear things. They want the word objection. They want to pause. They want a statute. Then they want to allow you to allow to explain how that statute affects that piece of evidence. And it's all about evidence, bringing in pieces of evidence one at a time, which I believe John can conduct the trial. I think that when he goes to trial, that he will do very well because he can conduct himself in statutory terms. And that is the way to bring in evidence. I mean, he's just trying to bring in one piece of evidence, which they have actually held through extrinsic fraud from the very beginning. And they actually paid off his own attorney to hide that fact. And it's obvious. It's clear as day. You can see it so clearly when you see the record. And in John's case, a forensic analysis shows that they, for 8 years, they conducted everything that they could to make sure that this particular fact, the illegal sewer line, got buried in the court order and never made it to the light of day. But I think it's John's hope, his forgiveness of the people who've persecuted him for 8 years, and his ability to stand quietly, not let them faze you. I mean, the reality is he knows, yes, there is a police officer, two police officers ready to arrest him, and the judge has made it very, very painfully clear that if he continues on with this process, that she's going to have him charged with all manner of bills, and Mr., you know, the opposing counsel most likely will charge $400 an hour and say that he spent, you know, $20,000, $30,000 worth of hours defending himself. And they're basically playing with the abusive process, but they're protecting each other. That's all they're doing, just protecting one another from the victim. You know, the victim
It's part of the reason why, you know, I think in the beginning you said that no attorney would represent you in a broken chair petition.
No, they won't.
Because
anytime an attorney realizes that there's a corrupt judge behind the bench, it means it's a signal to any attorney that walks in that this judge can pull your license if you try to, you know, go against the judge. Like, John is saying something that he's been telling his attorneys that they should discuss. Please bring up the gravamen of the complaint. He made it very clear to them, and they intentionally withheld it. And then they dumped him at the very end, you know, because they knew that their hands were dirty. They tried to, you know, clean their hands, wash their hands of the matter. But the reality is their hands are dirty, no matter what they do. And this is the thing about fraud. If it's conducted, there is no statute of limitations. I just want to repeat that because it's something that no judge, no attorney is going to tell you about. The fact of the matter is, if you can prove the intention to deceive, mens rea, the intention of the mind at the time of the incident, if you can prove that at the time that the attorney signed the contract with you, that he had his fingers crossed behind his back and he intended, and he had already engaged in conspiracy, which is a secret agreement with the opposing side. So he engaged in a secret agreement, a conspiracy with the opposing side, to deceive you. You know, and he was going to deceive the court because, really, who are they deceiving? You have a corrupt judge. A corrupt judge is deceiving the court. A corrupt judge is an officer of the court. So is an attorney, an officer of the court. But they are not the court. The court is honorable, even if a judge is not, even if the attorneys are not. But you don't go after the judge. At no time did John ever.
Well, they're not. They don't hold each other. They don't hold each other accountable for fear of being held accountable themselves for their own corruption and fraud.
Well, you know, it's kind of like, you know.
Oh, we are really down to the bottom, Asha. Sorry, I just looked at the time. We have like 17 seconds left. So I want to thank you all for listening in, Assisting Pro Se Litigants. This is an educational series, and we will be back on next week, same time, same place, same phone number, in World Integrity News Network. Good night, everybody, and God bless you all.
Thank you.